Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today I have Tom Stevens on the line, and he's a CEO of TomBot, Inc. He's also going to be a speaker at the upcoming Newport Beach Investor Conference that we've been covering for Brad Turner and his crew over there. That's going to be taking place on Thursday, March 21st. So we'll get into that as well. But first thing first, hey, welcome to the show, Tom.
Thank you, Adam. Very nice to be here.
All right, Tom. When I was doing kind of the research for this interview and looking things up, I saw I went to your LinkedIn, of course, which for everybody listening, I mean, pretty straightforward. You type in Tom Stevens, TomBot, and it'll pop right up. And I saw some renditions and everything else on there. And I just have to ask, like, where did this idea come from?
In 2011, my mother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's dementia, and I had to take away her dog for safety reasons. I looked around for substitutes for live animal companions. She hated everything that I brought home. And so I realized at that time that there was a gap in the market.
Would you call yourself, and you know, I'm looking at your background here, would you call yourself a serial entrepreneur or a natural born entrepreneur? Like, because sometimes you come up with an idea, but it doesn't mean you follow through. Like, how would you categorize yourself?
Well, I'm fortunate that I've had the experience of building a previous startup with a couple of partners. I'm not at my core really that risk loving, but having the right people around me sort of encouraged me to take this chance. My two TomBot co-founders and I built a prior startup into one of the world's largest litigation automation companies. And we had an exit in 2011, which gave me the freedom to think about other things. And my mother, of course, gave me my new mission.
Wow. What an amazing story. And I asked that question because I'm risk adverse as well. So when I looked at your background, I'm like, from this to then TomBot, I'm like, you know, that's a leap. But I can see, like, when a mission hits you that personally, like, was that kind of the moment as you started doing your research and otherwise, you're like, you know, I want to solve this problem, you know, for others as well. Like, how did you know it was the idea, so to speak?
Well, it grew on me over time. So my mother and I had a very close relationship, but the day I took away her dog, which was several very tough decisions downstream after her diagnosis of Alzheimer's dementia, it really destroyed our relationship. Every day was, where's my dog? Why can't I have my dog? When am I getting my dog back? And really, just purely out of selfish reasons to try to salvage our relationship, I started looking into this much more closely. It ultimately led me to going back to school and getting a master's degree from Stanford University. And it was really through that process where I came to appreciate this wasn't just a unique situation for my mother, but for over a billion people that have some form of serious mental or physical health adversity that prevents them from safely or practically caring for a live animal. And so I realized if I could help my mom, I could probably help a lot of other people too.
Amazing. And as you were going through, let's just say, this journey of exploration, and if I'm off on this, then please correct me on the term, but I would say on robotic animals, like for treating mental health and maybe other things. Is that how I would say that? Robotic animals or?
Yes, exactly. So there's been the orientation about this was really trying to figure out if an artificial animal, if some sort of substitute for a live animal, could have similar impacts on that person. And there's a lot of research around this area, around emotional attachment. Certainly, most of us that have kids are familiar with emotional attachment objects, whether that's you know, a favorite stuffed animal or a blanket or something else. I have a 6-year-old now, and my 6-year-old is inseparable from a little teddy bear doll, which is, you know, kind of annoying when he's coming everywhere with my son. But there is a lot of science, a lot of study that's been done on the neurochemistry of what's going on there. And we end up, well, just to get into those details. So human beings have evolved a neurochemical system for taking care of babies. Human babies are born altricial, meaning that if we leave them alone, they'll perish. unlike a hoofed animal, like a horse or a cow or a deer, who's on its feet within 30 minutes or so and yeah. able to flee predators not long after that. If we leave the babies alone, their likelihood of survival is not good. So we need to take care of it. And the reason for that is we birth babies prematurely. Our brains, if they were to grow to full maturity while they were still in the mother's uterus, would not be able to get out successfully. So humans give birth to premature babies that need a lot of care. And humans have developed a reward system for taking care of babies. It's very powerful, and I can get into the science behind that further. But what's interesting, and what I really didn't understand, despite having animals my entire life through my mother, is that human beings have been selectively breeding dogs for thousands of years to imitate the traits in human babies that cause us to want to care for the babies. And so very powerful neural chemistry. And so when we think of emotional attachment objects, we're thinking about things that we believe that need care. And we're convinced of that. And through that desire to care for the well-being of that object, whether it's organic or inorganic, that's what creates positive changes in our brain's neurochemistry. So the question for us was, could we actually create something that did that? Mm. And I had no idea where it would go. I tried to be as agnostic about it as possible, and I had these ideas in the back of my mind that maybe a robot could play a role, but I really had no idea. And so we ended up teaming up with Jim Henson's Creature Shop to do our artistic design, and they helped us produce 5 generations of high-fidelity prototypes that ended up at the version of the robotic puppy that you see online.
Is that the one? I want to just make sure, because I want other people to check this out too. When I look at your LinkedIn profile and I see the kind of brown puppy there, is that the one that I'm looking at?
I'm guessing yes. I could go check my LinkedIn profile, certainly at our website.
or I should say at tombot.com. Yeah, I was going to say we're at tombot.com, of course. Yes.
Exactly right. So that is what we're showing there is our 5th generation prototype. And what we learned.
He's adorable, by the way. I'm already loving him. I'm telling you. I only saw the small picture, but now I'm seeing him looking at me. I'm like, I want one of these. Go ahead. I can't help it. He's adorable. Go ahead.
It's way more impressive in person than it is even the videos online. But so we conducted 3 rounds of customer studies with over 700 seniors with dementia, generating, once again, 5 unique generations of prototypes. And there were 3 hypotheses that we were really at the core of our studies, 1 major hypothesis per round. And the first one was, would seniors with dementia prefer, or stated as a hypothesis, seniors with dementia would prefer objects that move over objects that don't move? The first thing I wanted to do is say, well, could this be done with a $12 stuffed animal, or does this need to be something that's more organic-like? And it was clear 100% of the seniors with dementia preferred objects that moved over objects that didn't. Just as an aside, seniors with dementia don't give reliable information all the time verbally. So we worked with Georgia Tech and the University of Illinois on coding methodologies for our studies, so we could code behaviors of theirs that we observed and then quantify those behaviors based upon what the object was that they're actually looking at. So once again, objects that move over objects that don't, which could help explain why my mom hated everything that I brought home. Secondly, objects that look realistic as opposed to cartoon-like or toy-like, which was not really evident to us when we were going into it, but on hindsight, it was. You know, my mother had never walked down the toy aisle at Target shopping for herself. So having something that a senior would not identify with, or put differently, would identify as belonging to somebody else, like a young child, we realized was not going to be successful. So realistic appearance. But there were still concerns. Even though it could move and had realistic appearance, the prototypes that we used that round did not move realistically. They moved rather mechanically, and that was disturbing. to people. And so our third round, which features the robot that you see on our LinkedIn and our website, her name is Jenny. Jenny doesn't just look and feel realistic, she behaves realistically. So not
wow.
only can she have the potential to be animated in such a way that she looks realistic, she's fully interactive and responds within the context of what's happening in her environment. Mm. So her behaviors not only look good, but they make sense.
Mm. It's an amazing story. And I'm telling you, everybody that's listening to this, go to Tombot, that's TOMBOT.com. And you just have to see this for yourself. It's amazing. And as you're talking about this, I got to throw something out there. And I know you didn't know this, Tom, for the audience. Tom does not know this. But what I was thinking about this as you're describing it, I'm so happy that you explained the science behind this, and especially with dogs and robot dogs, because I've had experiences, nothing as advanced as this, but some of the earlier like versions of ones that I would argue yours is, I mean, that's the most advanced dog in this case that I've ever seen for sure in my experience. But I've had some of the earlier ones and other things that were more toys, more gimmicky things like this. But I was always laughing at myself because I'm like, man, I kind of like this thing a little bit more than just direct. You're talking about your six-year-old, and I'm like, oh, man, I don't even want to tell Tom. I'm pretty sure I'm going to the conference. I'm like, Tom's going to say, yeah, that's the guy that plays with this. but hey, you're in the business of it. I mean, you're helping people with it. So at least, but I did. I had a little bit more of an attachment. Like, I'm not joking. I could never figure out why. I'm like, why do I, like, care what happens to this little toy? And I'm like, maybe I just was, you know, a little bit closer to that part of the feeling, so I wasn't going crazy. So that's good.
Well, I'll confess, Adam, that I'm very similar.
We feel more.
Well, so we're very empathetic. So we try to read into what's happening with someone or something else and care about mm-hmm. its well-being. And then the other thing is just the whole reason why, you know, based here in LA, Hollywood, mm-hmm. the whole reason why, you know, the entertainment industry exists. We as humans love to suspend disbelief. We imagine that we're in the middle of a action movie or a love story. We give traits to mechanical toys, or in this case, a robotic animal that it doesn't really have, and we like it. We like doing that. In fact, one of the things from an ethical standpoint that we were concerned about with when we first started this mission was tricking or being perceived as tricking the seniors with dementia. You know, could they tell the difference between this and a real animal? And it turns out they can, and they like the fact that it is a robotic animal and not a live animal.
Mm.
Pet ownership rates peak when we're in our 50s and decline about 50% per decade after that. You get to our 90s, very few people in their 90s care for live animals. And the reasons are, first of all, number one, burden of care. It's a lot of work. And so it's not just a commitment personally, it's also a lifestyle. Secondly, it's expensive. Americans on average spend about $2,500 a year on a dog because we love them and we want to take care of them and feed
them
well.
Family.
Yeah, exactly. And thirdly, and this was a surprise, they don't want to grieve for the loss of another animal because, as you say, they're part of the family. And tragically, these family members only live, you know, 8 to 15 years typically. So,
Great point. And it makes so much sense, especially depending on the age, because they're going through that possibly with friends around them, depending on what age they are when this sets in. And otherwise, I mean, I could think of as a kid, now that you say that, after I lost my second dog, I really wasn't up for a third one. I was like, and that was just natural cause. I mean, these were dogs that I had for a long time, but I mean, I started pretty young when my parents would get me dogs. And by the time I got to the third one, I'm like, yeah, I don't really want to go through that again, actually. And I said, and they were surprised.
It's really rough. You know, I had the privilege of having a mother that was a huge animal lover, and we had enough land to have horses and ducks and geese and chickens and dogs and cats. And through my mother, and then ultimately independently, I've probably had 30 dogs. Even the most recent one that passed away was absolutely tore me up. It's terrible. And we do that because we want to, but at some point for many people, they just don't want to endure that anymore. So what's important for us to convey to the general public is that we're not competing against live animals. We're not trying to displace a live animal from a home, but rather where people have either made a choice to no longer have that live animal, or for whatever reason, it's just not safe for them to do that, we're going to fill that void. Where a live animal can be successfully maintained, that's probably, it's usually going to be a better solution than what we can do. But where they can't, we're way better than nothing. We're actually causing these people to be happy and have that companionship that they long for.
Tom, what was it like working with Jim Henson's team? I'm like, does your six-year-old know who that is yet? Like Muppet Babies? That must have been a kick. Come on.
I have to say, my six-year-old doesn't quite get how special it is. He's been on the tour.
I'm a fan over here. I'm like, oh, Muppet Babies, what? That's who created. Like, that's cool. Go ahead.
There's a video on our website. If anyone's interested, go to our website and go to the page about Jenny, and you'll see a video, behind-the-scenes video, where we interview couple of the leaders from them. These aren't just amazingly talented, creative people. These are wonderful human beings that are doing what they're doing just out of love. And just out of extraordinary coincidence, the two senior most leaders, the creative director and their animatronic supervisor, both had dads in late stage dementia when we first met them.
Oh, come on. That's bringing mission. That's bringing everybody together. That's amazing. Wow. But it doesn't surprise me when you say that. It's like, wow.
Well, the numbers are more tragic than any other story. This is the prevalence of the diseases like Alzheimer's that lead to dementia in society are just far greater than I ever appreciated before getting into this. But what it did, though, is it sort of connected us as brothers and sisters in this mission together. It wasn't just, hey, let's make a good-looking dog. You know, let's go help people. And so wonderful relationship with them. But you'll see on this video, I'm a kid in a candy store. It's just the most extraordinary experience being with these
people.
You
bring your six-year-old just so you could fake it? Like, oh, it's for the kids.
Oh, exactly.
We're bringing kids like 2 years old. No, the kid's going to love it. This is perfect.
I've been a fan of the Jim Henson Company my entire cognizant life. And so beginning with Sesame Street and Muppets, of course. But I didn't realize just how many commercial TV film props they made. And you walk around their shop and you go, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Everywhere you turn is something
on all the puppets. Oh, that's amazing.
It's wonderful, wonderful experience.
So where are we at with the overall development of it? Like, what's the roadmap look like for rolling this out and distribution and otherwise? Like, what you can share today, that is.
Sure. For our first product to market, which is designed to reduce the behavioral and psychological symptoms of dementia and reduce their need for certain medications, including psychotropics, that first product that we're bringing to market, which is the one that you see on our website and LinkedIn, we are in final alpha pre-production. We'll finish this phase in April, May timeframe, and then we'll roll into our beta and what's called design for manufacturing, or DFM phase. That's the phase where even though the product looks like the production version, works like the production version, still needs a little bit of refinement so that it can be manufactured more easily and more consistently. And then that will also produce our beta robots. And once we have a beta version that's working the way we and our customers want it to, we'll ramp up production and start delivering product to our backlog of orders.
Yeah, that's exciting. And I see on the website right now, there's a big old button there for reserve your puppy. So I'm guessing that's how you're collecting the reserve. And you go to the website once, and especially if you have a parent in the situation that you're like, yeah, I can see how these things are going to be very helpful to individuals. And I know I'm not going to, put a term on it, whether it's stage one or I won't even use that. I just mean in general, where do you see this going? Like, to treat over other mental health, or, let's dream for a moment, not holding it anything. I understand you're very clear on what it's doing now, but let's dream for a moment. Where do you see this going?
If I may give you a very short answer about how we think about this philosophically, and then I'll answer your question directly.
Please.
From my background in product development, product innovation, it's very, very important for the success of the product, success of the business, to define your customer very narrowly and then understand their problems at an expert level and then develop to solve those problems. I do not believe that general products for general customers succeed. So this first product was developed specifically for seniors with dementia, but it's a dog, it's a puppy. And so about half of our 6,000 plus pre-order and waitlist customers are for children with autism, adolescents with serious anxiety, depression, suicide risk, adults with PTSD, bipolar, schizophrenia, and adults and seniors who are cognitively healthy but live alone and are at risk of social isolation, severe loneliness. We have not tested our product with these other use cases, and we don't want to say that the product will have the same benefits for these people until we do. But we do expect that the product, particularly for more cognitively healthy population, will require more technical sophistication, greater realism. And something that I haven't mentioned is that we will also monitor for safety and health. Version 1.0 will monitor seniors with dementia for sundowning syndrome. Sundowning is where late in the day, senior gets especially confused and disoriented. It's the most likely time for wandering risk or agitation or other challenging behaviors. And what's happening is the senior simply disengages. They become very inwardly directed and inwardly motivated, and whatever it is that's driving them, that's what they want to pursue. And they disengage from our puppy. And so what we'll do is we'll monitor that and then help organize that information in such a way that doctors can at a glance see what's been happening since the last patient visit, rather, and help tailor treatment plans to try to get more even cognitive levels and mood levels throughout the late afternoon and evening. We will continue to expand on the safety and health monitoring as we expand into these other consumer segments or customer segments, rather. So think Apple smartwatch. So it tells time. It's a dog. It tells time. But but what are the other things that we can do with our sensors now that we have them in place?
Yeah, it's a great story. And yeah, and that's why I said, let's end. I know you're very direct on the current, you know, product development, but it's just like the dreamer in me is like, oh, I see this and this and this. You already know. I'm talking to entrepreneurs about this. You're right. It is a puppy and it's an amazing one. And Jim Henson's crew did a great job. So I'm excited to continue to watch this develop and watch this story develop. And so final question, this is the hardest question of the day, Tom. This is my like, you know, are you excited for the conference, man? Newport Beach Investor Conference. Are you excited?
Oh, absolutely. I love bringing Jenny out. Jenny is the name of our robot. I love bringing her out in public and getting the feedback. People have things to say. I was just at a conference earlier this week, and people do double takes. They're trying to figure out if this is a real puppy or not. And then they want to know about it. And then they share their own stories about how a loved one has, or someone they know or a loved one has gone through some sort of challenge and health challenge and how this might be appropriate for them. And so I learn every time I go out and meet people, but I also love the feedback, and even small comments help us in helping navigate not just how to bring it to market, but how to make it a better product.
Amazing. It's a great story. And I'm not going to lie, like, this is making me want to go to the conference more because I get to see Jenny in person. I'm like, come on, I want a paw print or something like that. we need to get her a little booty, like a little stamp. I'm a fan. I want a paw print. Come on.
that's a great idea, actually.
you're welcome. That's a good one. I know. And I want and definitely get the, you know, how like Comic-Con and things like that, they have the little posters. So get the little smaller one, whatever, like Jenny was here, however you want to do it, like very fun. I want something to take away because I know I can't take a puppy away yet, so I'm in.
very soon it gets
amazing.
We want to, so Jenny has her own Facebook page, so we want to develop, maybe not fandom like a superhero thing, but we do want a way for our community to engage with each other. You know, just the last thing, one of the most important discoveries I made was when someone recommended early in my journey with my mother is to come to a caregiver community meeting where you meet with other family members who are caregivers on behalf of a loved one with dementia. And that was super powerful. And we want to be able to extend, to the extent we can, that connectivity to our entire customer community so that they can benefit from stories, best practices, or just, you know, sort of emotional support.
Amazing. And Tom, first off, great having you on the show. For everybody that's listening, real simple, tombot.com, T-O-M-B-O-T.com. Definitely go check this out. If you're at the Newport Beach Investor Conference, definitely come meet Jenny in person. And if you're listening to the Mission Matters for the first time, and this is the first time you're with us, and you haven't hit that subscribe button yet, this is your personal invitation to do so. Hit that subscribe button. We have a lot more interviews coming up, some great guests, some great entrepreneurs, and great content coming up. I don't want you to miss a thing. And if you're a long-term listener and if you haven't left us a review yet, come on, get that review in there. We really appreciate it, and it helps the show grow. So give us that review. Tom, really, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, and I look forward to meeting in person at the conference. So thanks again.
Thank you so much, Adam. Thank you for having me.